even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The following big interview was posted in full for our socios, our members, our friends, our supporters at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. And that was last season, 2019-20. Sign up there and you'll get every interview we produce before it's released on the main feed, plus the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You'll also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. And what's more, you'll be supporting us. You'll be keeping this independent podcast on the road. Thank you. When it comes to the big interview, one of the great privileges is that I get to invite people I like. Now, that isn't program sellers often, or pie sellers, or kit men. It's often footballers, managers. And in this instance, you've been watching Micah Richards on Sky or on Match of the Day since, I don't know, 2006, 7, 8, and you're still seeing him on those shows now because, sadly, an excellent career was truncated by injury. However, what he's proved is that he's exceptional at analysing football, talking about the sport he loves on television, and therefore we asked him to join us in the big interview. And our guest was, of course, a Premier League winner with Manchester City. Now, he's popular in what he does. The range of football shows where he's popping up indicate that television thinks he's great. You're about to hear a remarkable inside account of the making of England's champions in 2012, starring, who else? Roberto Mancini, Mario Balotelli, Manchester United, and Micah himself. Micah Richards. First of all, thank you very much for getting out your scratcher early this morning, driving south, coming here, and putting up with us. Thank you for this beautiful tea.
Thanks for putting up with me.
Now we've got more important subjects than transporting tea to speak about. Everybody in their lives, literally, well, everybody that we respect and might listen into this, aims for something, usually aims to be good at something, the best at something, or to triumph. You're a champion of England. You're a winner. Even though, you know, it's now a couple of weekends ago that that mad moment happened, how many times in a week or in a month, or when you wake up, or when you've had an awful day, or when you wake up and you pull the curtains and the sun's shining and you just go, yeah, 92nd minute and 30 heavenly seconds in Kuna. What's the abiding feeling of having reached the epitome of what you started to do? How does it stay with you? Does it manifest itself? Or Or is it just like only when some idiot like me asks you about it that it comes to the surface again?
No, because I'm now in media, I get asked it probably every week.
Right.
What was that moment like? Mm-hmm. It was difficult for me because it was a bittersweet moment in terms of I played all the season and I picked up a hamstring injury. Mm. So Zabaleta came in and was doing really well. So the last five games, I didn't actually start. I always came on. And if there was one game I wanted to play, was that the final game against QPR. And because Mancini didn't want to change a winning side, and I was his number one choice throughout the season, it was difficult for me to take. But then it was a moment when we went behind against QPR, it was, we're in this together. You know what I mean? It's a team game. It's not put all your personal accolades aside and your personal feelings aside, because we're in this together. And people always ask me, it's different for me because when you're playing with the likes of David Silva, Yaya Toure, company, it's sort of in their destiny. You know, they were like natural talents, if you know what I mean. They was always going to make it to the top, no matter, as long as I stayed on the straight and narrow. Mm-hmm. Whereas I come through the academy, and when Mancini came in, he didn't really know. I mean, he knew my name because I'd played for England and whatnot, but I wasn't a star player, so I had to almost work twice as hard to show him what I could do. So for me to then go and lift the Premier League, you know, and being at Man City since I was 14, it's like the best feeling in the world. And some people try brush it aside like, well, you was in a good team, but I had to work so hard to just stay amongst that squad. So for me, it will mean a lot more.
What was the process of convincing him like? Because it's obvious you would rely on, you know, you look at him and I say, well, Mike, I know what I do well, do what you do well. But presumably you have to size him up, you have to listen to him, he has to take a little look at you. And what we're used to learning about, when you unwrap professional sport a little bit, there's always crazy little moments of one kind or another, because after all, it's all people. Mm-hmm. So Mancini comes in and you go, okay, there are others who will immediately get a shove into the first team from him. I've got to convince him. What was that process mutually like between him and you?
It was difficult at the start because he had his favourites. Balotelli was his favourite, and he used to get away with murder. You know, I've said it time after time. But what people don't understand about Balotelli, he was one of the nicest people ever. And Mancini saw that me and him got on really well. So he thought, all right, let's see how this plays out. Mm-hmm. And it was the initial friendship with Mario which allowed me to get in with Mancini, if you know what I mean. So he helped me massively. I remember talking to Balotelli all the time. He said the manager really thinks you're a nice guy, because I just get on with my business. I don't really get involved with politics and stuff like that. I just say it how it is. I work hard in training. If you like me, you like me. If you don't, then, you know. But it was, you know, I owe a lot to Balotelli for sort of smoothing over that relationship, because at the start, I don't think Mancini rated me, if I was being totally honest. He thought I had good attributes, but I don't think he thought I could turn into a world-class performer. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to say world-class, because world-class to me, you know, I think of Ronaldinho, Ronaldo and all them sort of players. So I don't class myself world-class, but in that season, I performed world, you know, at the world-class level, in my opinion. Not saying I was world-class. And it was all down to Mario Balotelli.
Micah, in these podcasts, I don't often talk about hair or hairstyles, and you can see why. It done really work for me. I mean, I feel like non-drivers can opine about Formula One, you know, and just because I've opted for a different look. But it does kind of leave me a little... I mean, this is turning into a sub-story, but there's a lot of hair products I can't speak about. Do you hear me? And I don't know if you already know where I'm going, but You and Mario adopted the same barber. Because we're going to talk a lot about a certain 6-1 game. And in that game, the two of you have got just what looks like, I don't know if it's a little hedgehog here. Arturo Vidal's nicked it off you. Did you do it for each other? What was it?
Used to call it the Mohawk, didn't we?
Did.
Or Mohican. Everyone used to call us twins. Although I was a better looking twin.
He listens so Mario, so you might want to just say, only kidding, mate, or whatever.
I'm not
Chabelle.
And in that era, it was just a fashionable thing, and we both just ran with it.
Was it about speed?
No, it was, well, I was quick enough. I was quicker than him, so maybe he was using it for speed, but I was quick enough anyway. But yeah, we just... He had some crazy hairstyles. Mm-hmm. I had one or two, maybe three. But yeah, we just, you know, we was only young then. I think, how old was I then? 23? Yeah. I think he was 21 around that time. Yeah. So you're going through that stage where you're trying different hairstyles, but I wouldn't wear that now.
Life's got to be a laugh. if you're doing everything else seriously, like which you must have done training, and your attitude to work, as you said, life's got to be a laugh on this.
Yeah.
When you find the... Sorry, go back here again. When you find the fringes, you've got to have a laugh. But you, there's a picture in my mind, because if you're all right with it and you like him,
yeah.
Can we stop a little bit and try and tell people... Just paint Balotelli a little bit more as a picture, because I obviously don't know him particularly well, but I've had a couple of lucky experiences in that he came to do a big show for, I'm sure it was Nike, in Barcelona, and we got an invite. And the idea was that to launch these new boots, there was a massive, it was a sort of factory, there was a massive wall, but they'd made it a sort of tactile wall so that the ball would hit it and it would interact. There were certain things that would... So there was Marco Reus, World Cup winner, Borussia Dortmund, exceptional footballer. There was Cesc Fabregas, World Cup winner, exceptional footballer. Thierry Henry was the host. Blah, blah, it's the same thing, World Cup winner, exceptional footballer. He wasn't really supposed to join in because he was hosting, but he did join in. And there was Mario. And they had about five tasks. And it literally was, there was an interaction, for example, one was you had to do a little dribble and bend the ball and knock bricks out of the wall for points. But there were four or five drills like that that would be done at pace, and it was competitive. And of course they were there for the money and the da-da. But you were footballers... The instant that it's on, everybody's walled on the set. Now I'm on too. And Mario Balotelli won every drill by a street. And in my opinion, people remember him first probably for unrealised potential, secondly for japes, thirdly for powerful goals. But that fella was, to my eye, had enormous skill too.
He was incredible, one of the most talented footballers I've ever played with. I feel a little bit sorry for Mario at times, because he doesn't help himself on one hand, but the other hand, he's had a tough upbringing. You know, obviously he was adopted. And that, you know, I've got friends who are adopted as well, and they tell me, like, you know, they think about it every day. It plays on their mind. Mm-hmm. And I think with Mario, I think... He's going through things that people don't really know about, and he's getting judged upon that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, he's got to take responsibility himself as well and try not to put himself in these positions, because, yeah, he's underachieved massively because he's one of the, like I said, one of the best I've ever played with. But I feel like if there's ever a blame, he's always the one that gets it, rightly or wrongly, because... Like you said, the tasks that I did there, we would do that in training every single day. And I think some managers just found it frustrating that he wouldn't always show it on the pitch. Mm-hmm. But we all see what he can do. We see what he did in the Euros. He gets one assist at Man City that helps us win the league. He scored some terrific goals at AC Milan. He did well in his first spell in France as well. And then it sort of petered out when him and Vieira didn't see eye to eye at Nice. And, you know, he's back home in his hometown of Brescia now. And he's actually scored a few important goals as well. But I just feel like he doesn't know how to play his cards right, if you know what I mean, because he's so powerful and social media is so powerful now. Anything that he does is going to be taken out of context.
It's iconic and not so funny for those of us who sympathise with him and who'd love to have seen... I mean, not everybody can reach their full potential, so let's, you know, I'm not being an idiot. But it would have been nice to have seen, you know, I think maybe we've seen a 60% so far in his career of Mario Balotelli across everything. If we could have seen 80, 85%, then we'd still be talking about, we'd all be talking about a genuinely exceptional footballer. But it was in that game that I'm going to come to in a minute, 6-1, where you win at Old Trafford, where that's famously where he does... Why always me? So when he did that, you understood what he was saying, I guess, that day, or I don't know if you helped him plan it.
No, him and the kit man, Les Chapman, planned that themselves. They didn't tell anyone about it. But I remember there was some trouble at the team hotel. Can't go into detail for legal reasons, but Balotelli didn't even have nothing to do with it, and he got blamed for it. Do you know what I mean? And it was just a reoccurring theme time after time. And he felt, no matter how... hard he trained, no matter how well he performed, he was going to get tarnished with this brush anyway. And, you know, with a celebration, that's what it meant, you know. No matter what I do, it's always him.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're a hard worker, you're an honest man, and you excelled in your football career. There's no two questions about it, no two ways about it. And you said you were friendly with him, that you liked each other, that was a feeling. Was there a small part of the solidity your friendship gave him, or even just working together day to day, that partly why some of the best football we've seen from Mario came at City?
I just think whenever I was doing an interview, I would always try to protect him because I knew what the real Mario was like. And all he needs is someone who, you know, he did so well, not maybe because of me with the friendship, because Mancini believed in his ability. You know, when you've got a manager who believes in you, you know, you can do what you want in the game. You know, people would, you know, outside of Man City would say, oh, he shouldn't be playing, he shouldn't. Don't forget, we had strong strike force, Aguero, Tevez, Dzeko and Balotelli as well at the same. So he couldn't play every game, but that season he made huge impact. And I'd say it wasn't down to more me. I think it was down to more Mancini. But Mancini was just brutally honest with him. But it was like his son as well.
Because Mancini is not an ordinary football man, in my opinion, by any means. He was also, for those who... listen to this and only remember him as a manager. I'm old enough to have seen him as a player, and he was off the scale good. Off the scale. People thought Totti was brilliant. Mancini was, in all honesty, he didn't play for as long, but he was twice the player.
Really?
Mancini was off the scale. Just wow. Like a football Rolls Royce, but with a sort of Ferrari brain, elegant too. When they won the title at Samp, and him and Viale, They ripped Italian football apart and played in a different style because they were coming from an era which was much more cautious and much more percentage, and they weren't like that at all. And yeah, he's turned out to be a really interesting manager, but also a very stubborn, very opinionated man too. He's not your normal football man, I don't think.
No, I, being brutally honest, there was half the change room that loved him and half the change room that hated him, and I think that's probably why he left in the end, because I think he'd lost the changing room. I loved him. I loved how brutally honest he was with me. I loved how long he spent on the training ground with me. He was a perfectionist. It's difficult now because the modern player, you have to put your arm around a lot more. Whereas old school, I had Stuart Pearce. He was hard as nails. He'd tell you straight, you know, and for some reason, I reacted better to managers who would just tell me how it is. Do you know what I mean? Don't sugarcoat it. But Mancini sort of fell out with the wrong players in the dressing room. And I think that was the reason, you know, that they couldn't see eye to eye in the end. Because, like you said, he's opinionated. He's a perfectionist. He would be in at 6 o'clock in the morning and sometimes not leave till 11 o'clock until he was happy. But I love that about a manager because he's willing to go to places that other managers won't go to. Like, let's have it right. Mancini bought a trophy to Man City and it took 40 years. He's the first manager to do that. FA Cup, the next season the Premier League. And we can talk about Pellegrini, we could talk about Pep Guardiola in terms of his style of football he plays and, you know, winning back-to-back titles. But, you know, we was up against Arsene Wenger and Sir Alex Ferguson. You know, top managers. And Mancini to come over here and do that. Like, you know, you said at the start, then, you know, how important it was to win a Premier League for a player. But arguably, he's done something greater than what any player's done because he's up against top managers in one of the hardest leagues. And that's why he has my full support whenever speaking about him. And I know he was a difficult character, but it works for some players and it doesn't work for others.
What were the detailed things he did that helped you, that made you appreciate him?
Tactically, because in England, when I first come through, I started as a striker at 11, then I was a centre midfielder till 14, and I only became a defender when I was 16, because someone got injured in the Youth Cup. So positioning-wise, I was playing for the first team at 17, so I didn't know nothing about defensive tactics and all that stuff. So a lot of people used to say to me, oh, that Richards is good, but he's always out of position. I was like, well, I've never played in this position before. I was just learning as I was going, and I sort of got thrown into the deep end because of my physical attributes. And as soon as Mancini came in, he said, you can cross the ball. You know, you can get up and down. You're quite fit. You can defend one-on-one. But tactically, you're nowhere near where you're supposed to be for a player who wants to be at the top level. And at first, as a player, you're like, what are you talking about? I've been playing in the Premier League since 17. I know it all. I know. And then he showed me, well, look at this video. Why is your body position in this? You know what I mean? Why is your body position there? Why are you not supporting the play? Like, you don't have your rest there. Have your rest further up the field the way we want to press. If we're playing three at the back, this is where you need to be. And all these little things which I took for granted as a youngster. If I would have had Mancini from 18, I probably would have 56. And I didn't have no injuries.
Yeah.
Take out my knee equation. I probably would have had 50, 60 caps for England because he made me such a better player. All these things that I got away with other managers because I was just physically better than everyone else. That's what I loved about the Italian side because it's tactics. Some say it's boring and, you know, it's repetitive, but they do it for a reason.
It makes you better.
It makes you better.
A better chance of earning bigger salaries and lifting more trophies than
exactly that.
No, it's worth it. Were you a quick learner?
I would say so, yes, but maybe not quick enough as some top managers wanted, like Capello. I was in the England squad, 18. I was playing, then Capello came in. Then he dropped me back to the 21s because he said, tactically, we don't think you're right, which, you know, at the time, you say, well, I don't agree with you. But then if you look back and I always look at my opponent and that opponent, you know, if I'm up against Glenn Johnson, Kyle Walker, whoever it was at the time, Wes Brown, I look, well, what are they doing that's better than me? And sometimes, as a player, you say, well, they're not doing it. You know what I mean? Instead of thinking, well, you just do it and worry about yourself. You know what I mean? And I think that's where players get it a little bit wrong in their careers in terms of they're worried about what everyone else is doing rather than fixing what you're supposed to be doing. You know what I mean? And when he dropped me back to the 21s, it was tough. But then I think, well, what can I do to improve my game? And then obviously when Mancini came in, I learned quick, but it was different because it was a different style from obviously Italian way, Italian league to the Premier League, whereas it was just hustle and bustle.
Would you agree that compared to the culture then that you grew up in, whereby even though there's a reason why you didn't come through the sort of library book learning of what a right back should or a centre half should do, positionally, timing of a press. Or you, I think you hinted that in Britain we weren't great fans of there. Ever since I've been a kid, there have been great defenders who really read the game well. But as a culture, I don't think we put as much emphasis as we see now in England because of changes, because football's so available, you can watch anything, Y Scout is there, whatever other kit people have. Continental managers and players have come here. We're looking at a different landscape now completely in England than the one you grew up in, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's still not there yet, because when I was coming through, it was the bigger and stronger you are, the better. That was it. It wasn't nothing to do with tactics or technique. We're going to sign the big lags and try and improve them. Now I think it's gone a little bit too much where teams are trying to play out from the back too much. You know, they're trying to be... If a player's not comfortable on the ball, then you can't play that. You know, it needs to be taught from a young age. And they are trying that. But now I think what they're missing is big, strong centre-half just coming and heading it. So I think they need a little bit of both. So a lot of players, I agree with your point, a lot of players who now could go play in different leagues because they're more comfortable on the ball and they can play out from the back. But I think sometimes that one-on-one defending has gone out the game in England still as well. Now everyone's more concerned with their fullbacks, you know, playing as wingers. And sometimes, you know, if you look at Liverpool, two of the best fullbacks in the league, Robertson and Trent Alexander, he gets run by probably two or three times a game. But if the opposition don't score, it's just forgotten because he made two or six or score a goal. You know what I mean? So it depends as well what team you're in. Mm. But the coaching has definitely improved from when I was, when it was just big and strong and let's kick it long. Now people are trying to play out from the back, and I think that's why you've seen a lot of more British players being able to go and play abroad.
I think that's right, and it enthuses me a lot because, you know, even as a Scot, I'm kind of tired of England, a great football nation, for so long not really being a threat of winning a trophy. I'm going to take to the streets and celebrate when England win a trophy, but I will be quite pleased. Even as a Scot, I'd like to see players I know, often who I've met and liked, but players who I appreciate watching, binding together and winning a trophy, and it should come. I don't know if it's unwillingly, but I want to drag you back to the season in which you became a champion of England. It doesn't sound so bad when I say it. I feel there's a legitimate
it's
reason.
It's got a nice ring to it, hasn't it?
There you go. Even for me, I've got goosebumps and everything. Listen, everybody loved watching it. There's a couple of things I want to draw your opinion on. Because, you know, City United is a big thing. People would argue, and you were born in Birmingham, you grew up in Leeds, but you were here pretty early, so you kind of know the city quite well. You spent a big chunk of your working life here. So United-Liverpool is a big thing, and City-Liverpool wasn't for a long time, and then it became so, because your two seasons, you've touched on something that Neil and I have been preparing this, because honestly, we do prepare a little bit. You might not seem it. We thought the splitting the atom moment probably wasn't the money coming in, or actually Mancini arriving, or even Sonny Davids. Probably the splitting the atom moment is that cup run and winning. Now, if I'm not wrong, I haven't got my note here, but I think you scored the winner in the quarterfinal against Reading.
Reading, correct, yeah.
I mean, just a snapshot, because I haven't looked at it. How's the goal?
It was from a corner, a header. We won that 1-0.
Good fight. Like, journalistic vest is a brilliant soaring header, would you?
Well, yeah, you can say that. I'll take that.
Let's just leave it at that. Then you don't play in the semi against United.
Hamstring injury. Every time. I just feel like in my career, every time I got going to my top level, injury would stop me from then propelling to the next level.
Because you're straight back in for the final in a team that reads Hart, Mike Richards, Vinnie Kompany, Kolarov, Julian, who was here earlier on, Gareth Barry, David Silva, Nigel de Jong, who tried to take his boot straight into Xabi Alonso's chest exactly a year before I was there. Yaya Toure, who could play a little bit, Carlos Tevez, could play too, Balotelli, it's a hell of a side. It's only 1-0 against Tony Pulis' Stoke, but It's the Wembley feeling. I presume you had friends and family there. And also, irrespective of it being a smaller winning margin than some would have imagined against a difficult side, not a side anywhere near as really man for man as talented as yours, but even beyond the cup lift or a medal, actually winning is something that infuses, I think, your attitude, your behaviour, your level of training the next season, your expectations for, okay, most players go, okay, where do we go next? Mm-hmm. Not that's enough. Mm-hmm. Tell me some of those feelings, or if I'm wrong, or what did that feel like?
It felt so good because we hadn't won a trophy for so long. So no matter what happened, once the investment come in, we was the first ones to win the FA Cup and to win the Premier League. And it was the emotions were, I can't describe them. It was like a roller coaster where, you know, you're supposed to beat Stoke in the final, but you don't know if it's going to happen. And until it does, you look at you look to you've got Vincent Kompany, you know, to my left, you've got Jolyn Lescott, you've got Kolarov, you've got Silva, yeah, and you're just like, we need to win this game. Like, I never get nervous before any games ever, but this game I was nervous, and the derbies I was always nervous because I knew how much it meant, and the game was like it was played in slow motion. And it's like you just want you want it to end. You want it to end as soon as possible, just so you can see the outcome. Whether you win or lose, you just want it to be over. It's not an enjoyable feeling. No. Leading up to the game is horrible. Like the night before, you don't sleep. You're playing things in your head that you want the outcome to be. You're thinking worst case, you overthink everything. And then when you lift it, I think Balotelli got man of the match in that game. He was absolutely incredible. And after it, when you're up there, and I'm not really an emotional guy in terms of wanting to cry. I'm more happy, if you know what I mean. But, you know, that night I cried because it was like all that I've worked for had finally come together. But 10 minutes after I cried, I was like, I want more. What can we do now?
That was a genuine, real feeling, real inside
real
you.
Feeling. What can we do now? And I'm not just saying this is real emotions. Like, I want to win it every year. Or what's next? Can we win the Premier League? And that FA Cup moment spurred us on to go win the league the next day. Pre-season, we was in LA. We had like a team sort of bonding. We was out till 3 o'clock in the morning, probably three times, drinking, enjoying it. And we had like a group huddle, and we said, lads, we're going to need everyone together because we need to win the league this year. You know, no matter how, it's going to be ups and downs. People are not going to play. You know, you're not going to play as much as you want, but make sure we win the league this year. And if we wouldn't have gone to LA in that pre-season, I don't think it brought us together. You know, like it's in the change room. Say you got 25 players. Me and you might be best friends, but me and someone over there, we might not like each other because we're in the same position or we don't like that personality. But that LA trip galvanised the squad, and it's like, we've won something now. What can we do that's going to be greater than that? And the only thing that was going to be greater than winning the first trophy was winning the Premier League.
I do hope you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios, our members who support us. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day they're available, it's time for you to join us. To become a socio, and for only £2.99 per month, you'll get all our content entirely ad-free and ahead of its release on the main feed. Please go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to unlock our entire archive. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast, and we'll blow virtual kisses towards you. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things.
Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.